Hi, this is Dr. Jed Mikosko at Wake Forest University and Academic Influence, and I've got my friend here, Dr. Stuart Roystacher, and we are excited to do a Prof to Parent podcast. This is actually our 12th episode. Stuart, yeah, you've been gone for a few of them, but we interviewed some fantastic people while you were gone, and I hope you get to listen to this.
I'm sure they were outstanding. They were great.
And today we have just gotten news about rankings. This podcast will air a week from today, but this week was the U.S. News and World Report week. And tell me your thoughts about this Columbia thing. Go ahead, Stuart.
Well, there are two things that happen with the U.S. News and World Report that allow for rankings to change. One is that universities game the system by not falsifying data, but by changing the procedures by which they admit students and by investing in resources that are in the categories of use in News and World Report that make them look better. So that goes on. You can falsify data, or you can over time game the system because you know at least in a given year what U.S. News and World Report is looking for, so you try to deliver it, right? So if yield rate is important, the percentage of students who are admitted who actually enroll, well, then you try to manipulate your admission pool so that your yield rate is higher. And you can do that by putting on the wait list people who actually are highly qualified but you think might go elsewhere. So that increases your yield rate. So what you do is you say, oh, that person, they're probably going to end up going to Princeton. We figure they're going to get accepted there, and they're not going to come to us because their father and mother went to Princeton. Okay. We'll put them on the wait list. Yeah. That'll make them feel good.
Wait, I just got a question Do you think that happens at the very top schools? Because
yes.
Good to know.
Okay, so let's look for examples where that has actually happened. Chicago started to game the system and to try to get in the top 10. They were highly successful. Pennsylvania tried to game the system. You know, the ranking system started in the early 1980s, but it really started to get formalized in the late 1980s with the publication of America's Best Colleges. And that's when the pseudo-quantitative nature of the U.S. News Report started to get solidified, where it wasn't just a reputation survey, but there were other factors that played a role.
I certainly don't know. What is this publication that came out? Because I know, and I think our listeners know by now, that U.S. News and World Report started in 1983. That was the birth of the U.S. News and World Report college rankings. But what happened later? What's this book you're talking about, publication?
Okay, so by the early rankings were, as far as I remember, mostly reputational surveys, like the Gorman Report. Let's back up. Before the U.S. News and World Report became the king of university rankings, there were other rankings that were out there that were strictly reputational surveys. And then the U.S. News and World Report came in with these quasi-quantitative methods. But if you look at their 1983 rankings, they hadn't really fully formalized things. Stanford came out number one. I think Harvard came out number two. I could be wrong, but I remember Stanford was number one in the initial rankings, which caused a few raised eyebrows on the East Coast. And some public schools were highly ranked as well, from what I remember. And it wasn't until somewhere around, I think, about 87, it could be off by a couple of years either side, where this formal system of quantifying or pseudo-quantifying the worth of a college and having hundreds of colleges actually ranked started to really come into place. And I think it was in 87 or 88 when the U.S. News actually published a standalone publication, America's Best Colleges.
Standalone publication that came out in the magazine racks and you could buy it. Okay, all right. So,
correct.
And that was in somewhere in the late 80s. Okay.
Correct. So by then, they had already had more than a foot in the door. They were already recognized for their rankings, and they decided to really take over, right? And so every year in September, I think it was September, September or August, they would publish a standalone magazine or volume called America's Best Colleges. They started to rank graduate schools. They started to really step out and say, we are the king, and everyone gave them their crown. So before that, they were kind of a curiosity. But once they came along with that standalone publication, they became the true king of rankings, although I would maintain that RankYourCollege.com
Well, we've already heard about RankYourCollege.com.
That's right.
If you haven't listened to this podcast, you know that that's Stuart's ranking, and it's all randomized with some weighting on how much money they have in the bank. So anyway, go ahead.
Correct. Okay. So so once the U.S. News and World Report came out with their pseudo-quantitative system, certain universities that are highly regarded, but were always ending up in the second tier from 10 to 20, decided to game the system by trying not to falsify data, but by trying to aim their funding and their resources and their strategies to emphasizing aspects
Just before we move on, when you say second tier, you're talking 10 to 20. So just be very clear. Second tier can mean
correct.
A lot of things, but
you're talking
the 10 to 20 schools that are super amazing schools, but they didn't like being in double digits. They wanted to be in single digits. So they wanted
correct.
To change their spending habits to go after what U.S. News and World Report was using as their metrics.
And their admissions habits. So Chicago and Penn conscientiously made this effort to try to get into the top 10, and they were successful. I think Penn at one time ranked number 4. And it wasn't surprising that my old school hired Penn's dean of admissions, because they said, aha, this guy really has some ability. And I think they hired him about the time when Duke, which is traditionally in the U.S., that's an odd thing to say with regard to U.S. news, but it's been around for 40 years, right? So I guess you could say tradition. Duke has traditionally been in the 5 to 10 ranking. Okay, I think it might have gone in the top 5 once, but it dropped down to number 12 one year. And they're cast a pall on the university, right? And I think it was around that time when they hired Penn's admissions guy, who had managed to help with other efforts on the part of the Penn leadership to game the system. And I don't mean this gaming in an illegal way. They're doing this completely legally. They're not falsifying their data. To game the system to make sure they would stay in the top 10. And I think that Duke has been in the top 10 ever since they hired that guy. He's probably retired since the 1990s when he was hired, but maybe he's still there. He's quite a nice guy. I don't mean to claim he's a bad guy or evil or he's manipulating the system. He's actually quite a conscientious, hardworking guy. And in my old age, I've forgotten his name, all right? But he's a good guy. I've talked to him extensively. So Duke was already in the top 10, but it had fallen out of the top 10 one year, and that was enough to get them nervous as heck, because if everybody else is gaming the system and rising the top 10, other schools.
No, wait, hold on. You just
10.
Said you just said teams.
Didn't want
that's not a Freudian slip. That's not an accident. This sounds exactly like what happens when some school who's used to winning basketball doesn't even make it into the NCAA tournament. What do they do the next year? They hire a new coach. So it sounds exactly like what would happen on a team. But you said team, but you meant university. But it's the same thing.
It is like football teams. It is like basketball teams. They replaced their admissions dean with the Penn dean, who had a better record. Let's put it that way. All right. And he is a good guy. He's not an evil guy by any stretch of the imagination. But he knows how to game the system better than other admissions deans. Whether he's still there or not, I don't know. If he is, I'll say hi if he's listening to this broadcast. So that's one way to raise your ranking. And the other way is to falsify your data. And recently, a math professor at Columbia figured out that Columbia had risen from number 18, again, an outstanding school. There's really no difference between any of these top 20 schools. They're all outstanding. And that's why these rankings can change so rapidly, because tiny changes in manipulating the system, either by falsifying the data or gaming the system, can cause a dramatic rise in your ranking. So he noted that Columbia was at one time ranked as the number 18th school, according to U.S. News. And I think it was last year, they were as high as number two, right? They made it up to number two, which tells you what the difference is between 18 and number two. It's probably statistically insignificant. And certainly someone was hired by U.S. News who was a statistician who analyzed their methods and said, they're not statistically valid, and they quickly got rid of them. But at any rate, that might be a slight exaggeration, but not much. So the math professor at Columbia said, people must be falsifying data when they send it to U.S. News, which does not audit anyone. And sure enough, Columbia owned up to the fact, well, they didn't say they falsified their data. I can't remember the exact language they use, but they owned up to the fact that they were not sending the kind of data that other institutions were sending. And that's why they happened to gradually, surely, and probably also game the system for all I know. So it could be a combination of falsifying data and gaming the system, rose up to number two. And this year they submitted no data at all and fell to number 18. So how does a school get ranked at all when it doesn't submit data, right? I mean, it fell to number 18 because it got found out for falsifying data, said, okay, we're not going to submit this year. So it goes from number 2 to 18. How does U.S. News even come up with an 18 ranking if it has no data? So it has to make up data for it, right? That's what it has to do. So instead of falsifying data, which is what Columbia did, U.S. News estimated data for Columbia and knocked it down to its once number 18 ranking, which I'm sure was more or less arbitrary, right?
Now, arbitrary in the sense that they picked a number out of a hat. Do you make anything of the fact that it was 18 at one point and then now it's 18 again? I mean, is that significant to you that the two numbers are exactly the same?
If I have to guess that U.S. News and World Report said, okay, there were 18 once, let's just make them number 18 again. That's all they did. That would be my guess.
What they should have done
was, well, you falsified data last time and you're not submitting data this time, we're going to disqualify you for the year. I mean, that's what they should do, right?
Wouldn't that happen in sports? Like if people were, doping or, like giving bribes to people to come to their school, wouldn't they not be able to compete in
They'd
an NCAA tournament?
Exactly. They'd be on probation for 2 years. And the fact that that Columbia was in the Final Four last year, that would be eliminated from the rankings from the previous year, right? You'd have to say, Columbia, your number two ranking is now null and void for last year. We're gonna disqualify you.
So I'm seeing a problem here. I'm seeing a huge problem that our academic competitions, okay, if you want to call them that, the competition of universities qua universities as universities is totally in the hands of one private company. Whereas at least when it comes to competing on the gridiron or on the soccer pitch or on the baseball diamond, at least there's some kind of arbitration. There is some reasonableness with which we let people in or out of tournaments and how they get ranked in the football rankings, which people complain about, but at least there's some kind of arbitration.
Well,
how do you feel about
the difference between sports and these rankings for colleges based on their academic prowess is that these schools don't play against each other. So I think we should formalize this and have them play against each other in an intellectual contest. All right. Enough of these arbitrary rankings. Can you imagine if the AP and the coaches' polls ranked people based upon, ranked schools based upon what their lineups look like, right? The, oh yeah, that football team really looks good on paper. We're going to rank it number two. That's what U.S. News is doing. No one's playing the game. So I think we should formalize this and have true academic contests. You know, some quiz bowls, and professors on the stage going up against other professors. It could be MIT and Caltech in Jeopardy or something like this, academic Jeopardy. And then we could really see who's better. And then we could say which students are better. Well, then we could have the students on stage. And we could put that all in the hopper. And then we would have true indications of what school was indeed better. So how do you like that idea?
Okay. Well, I love it, but it's never going to happen. So let me tell you this. I mean, in some ways, professors at one university compete with professors at another university for things like academic grants. Okay. And in some ways, one university competes with another university for students who get into both universities and choose one over the other. Okay. So that's another competition. It's a real competition. Now, of course, there's gaming that goes on, as you said, because you said, and I don't know if this is true, but you said that if, let's say, you know, a person who went to Stanford's got a child who's got perfect SAT, perfect ACT, perfect grades, done, you know, saved the world, that person applies to Stanford, applies to Harvard. You said Harvard might put them on the waiting list just because on their application to Harvard, they list where their parents went, and they can see, oh, this guy's parents went to Stanford, and, you know, they live closer to Stanford than to Boston. So I'm going to just put them on the wait list. You said that happened. So then that actually is like a competition between Stanford and Harvard that can't really happen because it's being gamed, okay? It's like, yeah, you could rank two teams that play against each other, but what if one team cheats when they play? You know, then that doesn't mean much. So that one doesn't work so well, but you could do the best you can, because maybe it doesn't happen all the time and things wash out because Stanford does it back to Harvard sometimes. So maybe it all washes out. So what do you think about that? I mean, could you hope to ever, and I will say academicinfluence.com does do this. We have hard data on which schools people go to when they get the choice between two. And we've created a desirability ranking. So I'm saying this is possible. We haven't done a similar ranking for grants that have been won when two professors from two different universities compete for the same pot of money. But, you know, we could.
So what do you think about it? It would be an intellectual exercise that would not have much statistical validity, but it would be no worse than U.S. News and World Report. Let's put it that way. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it would still be worse than rankyourcollege.com.
It's the best. We already know that. It is far superior.
It's the best, of course. We all know the randomness is somehow intrinsically linked to the force with the mitochondrion inside of people's bodies, and somehow it just perfectly calculates. The correct ranking for each person when they click the button, and the refresh button is perfectly tuned to their own psychic aura, right?
Here, to the extent that I can get serious about rankings, which is not very much. You can come up with a number of criteria. Like, I think that wealthy schools tend to have better faculty, better resources for students, right? And they tend to attract wealthier kids. So my view is that if you really want to rank schools, the best way to rank schools is simply by the size of an endowment per pupil, right? That's all you need, all right? That's all. And then you would have schools chasing after in a race for the biggest endowments, all right? That's what you do. You could simplify it, because I think it's really a catch-all. They can pay professors more and make it more attractive for the best of professors to come to them. They can have nicer facilities. So that's one factor. But someone would disagree with me, right? They'd say, well, that endowment figure is nice, but I really want another measure, which is, let's say, the number of students that apply to the school. That's a measure of desirability, right? So you say, okay, now I got those two factors. How am I going to weight them, right? And how you weight them determines what ranking you get, right? That's okay. So they could say, okay, I want a third factor. Cool. What do you want the third factor? Number of Nobel Prizes won by faculty members, right? Let's put that in there in the hopper. Okay, so now you have three factors. Are you going to rate them equally in thirds? Are you going to weight rate one by 50% and the other two by 25%? Once you do that, you're making an arbitrary judgment. And once you identify one criteria, mm-hmm. you're making an arbitrary judgment. And a ranking will depend on those arbitrary judgments. And there is no validity to any particular weighting that you use. And what U.S. News does is it sort of reverse engineers this. It probably played with weightings until it got a ranking that looked, quote unquote, reasonable, right? Looked good.
No, that's what they did. They admit that that's what they did. They said they knew it was right when all
Correct.
The Ivy League
so
schools were at the top.
Early on,
that's
Stanford
what they said.
Was on top, and it raised a few eyebrows with the East Coast establishment because there's an East Coast bias in most everything in the United States. And so they jiggled their criteria until Stanford was no longer on top, but was like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5. And that made it more reasonable in people's minds, right? So once you come up with criteria and you weight them, what you are doing is arbitrarily ranking universities. And I can come up with an arbitrary ranking that satisfies me, right? And you can come up with an arbitrary ranking that satisfies you. And my guess is the same 50 to 100 schools will be in there in that ranking. And the top 10 will be about the same. The top 20 will be about the same. But where schools are within that top 20 will differ depending on how you weight it and I weight it, right? So then you could say, okay, let's get 100 people mm-hmm. doing what you and I do, okay? And then we will take the average of those. And maybe you'd come up with something that was more rigorous, but actually probably not, all right? It would represent some sort of broad consensus. Mm-hmm. So I would say, rather than U.S. News and World Report coming up with the one and only arbitrary ranking, or weighting. And it's not really the ranking that's important, but the weighting. Other people come up with their own weightings. You put them all in the hopper, 100 people who are quote unquote knowledgeable. And you probably end up with something that was reasonable and it wouldn't change year to year. That's the interesting thing, right? It probably wouldn't change dramatically year to year. And you could also look at statistically what's significant and you'd find out that probably the first top 15 were pretty much all identical, right? And that ranking would have less emphasis and mm-hmm. then people wouldn't be that interested in it. So if you look at U.S. News and World Report, it has dynamism. That is its trick. I don't know, does academic interest have dynamism? Do your rankings change from year to year?
We haven't been around long enough to know because we're still changing our algorithm because
okay.
it's not quite right yet. So, of course, there's dynamism. But once we get it right,
Correct.
Yeah, there probably won't
Whereas
be that
US
much dynamism.
The World Report has had dynamism because they keep changing their weights and because people are gaming the system and because people are falsifying their data. And that gives it news. Hence, we are talking today about Columbia's fall from grace. From number 2 back down to number 18, and the New York Times reported on it because the New York Times is obsessed with these elite schools to a level that I really don't understand. Like, their view of these elite schools is like New Yorkers' view of the rest of America west of the Hudson, okay? They really only think in their articles as if only about 20 schools in the country matter, which is just mind exploding. I really don't understand. And I talked to the reporter about this and she had a reason why, but which I will not, I'm not going to, it was a private conversation. It got contentious and I don't want to besmirch her name. Yeah.
Oh, great. So I sent her to you and then you made her feel bad. Oh, that's really,
that's
oh,
right.
Yeah, I'm not going to send any more reporters to you, Stuart. I'm so sorry. That's terrible. I'm shocked. I'm hearing this live on podcast, and now I am shocked.
Well,
I had.
She's asking me questions. I got to ask her questions. She's not. Most reporters are really good with the give and take. You know, I've dealt with a lot of reporters in my lifetime, and she wasn't so good with the give and take. She's, you know.
Say no more because people can probably trace down who wrote the article. So please don't say anything. So we'll keep the innocent. And okay, moving on. I might have to edit this out because this is not. We don't want to make people feel bad. Anyway, the point is that you have just described a solution to the problem, and I want to make sure that our listeners can understand because you ramble. So the solution that Stuart proposed to this problem is basically clone whoever's at the U.S. News and World Report 100 times, but in each cloning, you come up with people who have slightly different opinions about what should be weighted how much, okay? And they should base those opinions on their best understanding of what's important to a student going off to college. And once you have those 100 clones and they've come up with their weightings, then you mix them all together and you do the hard work of statistical analysis, which the U.S. News and World Report, according to you, had paid somebody to do and then fired them because they didn't like how it turned out. Okay, so then you do that hard work and you say, well, this group of schools is identical. So you rank them all in the same exact ranking. So if they're all number, you know, 1 through 15,
correct,
they all get the number one ranking. Okay, and then after, if there's a certain point where there's a cutoff and things are no longer, you know, identical, well, then you reported that. And you, of course it's a sliding scale. So the 15th school might be statistically different than the first one, but it's not statistically different from 14, 13, 12. So you can obviously present the data in some
correct
sort of thing with error bars, right? There's ways to do this. And you've proposed this as a proposal.
See, we're
and
on
I agree.
The same page,
I
which
think
is
this
rare.
Would be great.
So basically you would find 100, maybe even 1,000 quote unquote experts, and you give them all the data, right? Everyone gets the same data, and they get to weight that data in their own special way, right? And they come up with their own ranking, and then mm-hmm. you take that collective hive mind of ratings, and you put them all together, and you will come up with a national ranking mm-hmm. that will be even, I will admit this, okay? Mm-hmm. I've always said that Rank Your College is by far the best ranking in the world, maybe even the universe. But that ranking would be better than Rank Your College. I will, if that ever happens, I will disconnect. I will disconnect my website for Rank Your College, for which I pay $14.95 a year, $14.95 a year. I will go out of business.
Oh, gosh.
I will go out of business.
You'll save so much money. Okay. All right. Well, you've heard it right here, folks. On this podcast, Stuart is willing to take down his website if we get some kind of a hive mind, some kind of a collective mind about these rankings, so it's not all in the hands of one company. So I'm glad. Now, I want to just, since Academic Influence is sort of the brainchild behind this podcast, academicinfluence.com, I always want to say that until we get that hive mind ranking, I think that, well, your ranking is good. Your ranking is pretty good, but my ranking at academicinfluence.com, I'm saying mine, it's obviously our ranking, and I did not even write the algorithm. There's another guy who is the brains behind that algorithm.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good, okay? Because it's true that a school with more money should be better for your student. I agree.
I should say that I did not write the Perl script for rankyourcollege.com. My daughter's boyfriend, who went on to get a PhD in computer science at Purdue, wrote it when he was 16 years old. So it was.
Credit's where credit's due. Yeah.
But he's.
Don't worry. He's not your son-in-law. You don't have to remember his name.
And a wonderful first boyfriend for my daughter. Okay. And he had computer skills.
Okay. Well, maybe you should keep it private. Okay, keep it private. Okay, let's keep this private. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make with academicinfluence.com, and this is a point that we went over when you weren't here, Stuart, you were on vacation, and I interviewed a writer for Forbes who also was a president at Missouri State University and has and served in the cabinet the state of Missouri under the governor. He's a great guy. His name is Mike Neitzel, and he loves our company. He's written a bunch of articles about us and our rankings in Forbes, which we are very grateful for, but he does it because he likes us. And the reason he likes us is because he said there are several ways you could objectively rank colleges. One is the way you just described. Rank them based on their total amount of endowment money, everything, all kit and caboodle. Another way you could do it, and you didn't mention this one, but I'm sure our listeners could think of this one. You could rank colleges based on how well their graduates do financially. The return on investment, okay, based on how much they had to pay in college and how much they get out in the end. In fact, I interviewed a guy who works for the Washington Monthly. He's the editor-in-chief for the Washington Monthly, and he came up with that as primarily his strategy for ranking, okay? And you agree. That's another objective way to do it. Now, people can game it. People can game it because this is based on some sort of 5 years after graduation, so obviously, you know, you could target the people who are 5 years out from your college and give them big fat paychecks for, I don't know, twiddling their thumbs for an hour or something. And that would boost their salary and therefore boost your rankings. But imagine a world where you could somehow really see how much those graduates make over their lifetime. And if the university wants to pay them, okay, well, that's their choice, you know, to pay them exorbitant salaries so all their graduates do really well. I don't think that strategy is viable. Because then you could somehow mix together the remaining money that college has and the money that they've given out. And, you know, and anyway, you can see my point. But here's what academic influence does. It says, okay, we don't care about your salary. We don't care about how much money's in the bank. We care about, did you graduate people who go on to influence the world? Okay, that's why we call it academic influence. We sum up all the influence that a group of graduates have gotten and how much influence those professors that they've hired have gotten. And we add it all up and that's the ranking for the university. And yes, it won't change. Once we fine tune everything and we get it humming, then it probably won't change much unless a school figures out how to teach people better, how to give them more moral fortitude so that those graduates somehow become more influential in the world than any other graduate. So that's why I like my ranking even better than your ranking, Stuart. And I don't know if you were going to give me an honest answer about whether you think my ranking sounds pretty good to you because you're such a joker. But what do you think? In all honesty, do you think it's a
it's
good
no
thing?
US News and World Report. I know. And if it's
that's all you're going to give me. That's not
if
much.
It eventually stays static. It will be better than U.S. News and World Report. Because as you know, and I know,
well, thank you.
These schools move at glacial speeds. And the top 20 or 50 universities in the country, however you want to order them in any sort of ranking, don't change that much from year to year. They don't even change that much from decade to decade. So a true, honest ranking will not change that much year to year. So once you fine-tune this thing so that it basically, it's just like solid ice, you know, a block of ice where everybody stays about the same. Maybe miraculously the number 6 goes to number 5 or the number 18 takes a terrible fall to number 20, okay, in 1 year, okay? Then I will give you, I will bow down to you and say, that your ranking is almost as good as mine, okay?
But not as good as the Hive. You still think that the Hive mentality
would be the best idea, short of actually, you know, going into this. I think this direct competition in quiz bowls might be the best idea.
That sounds promising.
I mean, really,
we should definitely tell President Biden that No Child Left Behind is for wimps. You know, we need to have no professor left standing.
No, can you imagine if Seton Hall
fight
to
the finish.
Beat Harvard in a quiz bowl? You know, it would be a shocker.
Well, what about boxing? Exactly. Let's have them duke it out. You know,
it would shock the world. And Harvard would hang their head in shame, and they would retool for next year, you know? Okay? And then you could have name and likeness money for the students, just like you do for the football players and the basketball players.
There's a lot of money to be made here in this competition.
I think you're on to something as well. If you're aiming toward a rock solid ranking that represents, you know, your own personal bias or group mind bias of your group, and it just stays solid, you're ahead of the game of U.S. News and World Report, and you're ahead of the game of my joke ranking system, RankYourCollege.com, which where the ranking changes every second.
Okay. Now I have my hand up here because I want to say one more thing about this AcademicInfluence.com thing. You say hive mentality is good. I agree. In fact, that's what we're doing with AcademicInfluence.com. We are taking the hive mentality of all of Wikipedia, all of Wikidata, all of the papers that go into Crossref and Semantic Scholar, which is pretty much all the papers that are ever published. And we take that and say, okay, well, who's getting cited the most? Who's getting mentioned the most on Wikipedia? Who's in there the most? You know, I don't see how our hive mentality is any worse than your 100-person or even 1,000-person hive mentality. And the nice thing about ours is it's not about waiting. It's all about one thing and one thing only: how much you've influenced this planet. How much, at least in the Wikipedia and English literature,
it is one person's view of what's important of an institution, right? So you'd want to have other people's view of what's important in an institution. And so you get 100 or 1,000 people to do that. You're better off, in my humble or not so humble.
I agree. You're right. Okay. You're saying that even though influence seems pretty reasonable, like how much you influence it seems reasonable, but there's some wisdom in saying, well, what do 1,000 people think is the most important thing?
I say
thing?
This.
And
is,
I agree. Okay. So I will see. Someone ranked it to you.
There's a ranking out there on the web. You can find everything on the web, right? There's a ranking of influence of people by their initials. So their first name and their last name. So yours would be JM, right? And mine is SR. And I don't know how they came up with this, but I am in the world, according to them, the 1,122nd most influential person with the initials SR. All right. So how do you come up with that? I really don't know, but they've done it. Okay.
I'm gonna have to find that website because they sound like a big competitor to Academic Influence. Because even though we're all about ranking universities, we have to start by ranking people. So we obviously could do the same exact thing, but of course we would do it better than whatever company you're talking about. But I have no idea who they are, and when I find out who they are, we're gonna pound them into the ground because they are a direct competitor. Okay, well, I think we've talked enough for today. We've got to save some energy for next week when we meet again. And it's been truly fun. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Stuart.
Same here. And we've agreed on some things this time, which is a breakthrough.
That's a breakthrough. So thank you, Stuart, and we'll see you next week.
Next week it is.